Gardner. So Ariana just turned on a recording device, so we'll be taking an audio recording just of our presentation so that we can have it up on the website for anyone who wasn't able to make it tonight or isn't able to make it to our workshop tomorrow. I am the grants coordinator for the Nature Neighborhoods Community Grants. We're funded through a 2013 levy that was then renewed in 2018, and Juan Carlos will talk a little bit more about that. But we have two grants available over the next 5 years. We have the Nature Neighborhoods Nature Education and Outdoor Experiences grants that were awarded in 2018 and will be awarded every other year, and these Restoration and Community Stewardship grants that will be also offered every other year, so 2019 and 2021 is the next offering of these grants. So again, thank you so much for being here tonight, and I'll pass it over to Juan Carlos and Oriana to introduce themselves.
Thank you, Krista. My name is Juan Carlos Ocaña Chiu, and I work here at Metro as the Business Services Manager for the Parks and Nature Department. And I have the fortune and the pleasure of overseeing the Community Investments and Partnerships Program, which includes the Nature and Neighborhood Grants. So that's what I'm here for.
Hi, I'm Oriana Quackenbush. I am the Program Assistant for the Community Investments and Partnerships team. So that's all of the Nature and Neighborhood Grants and our Partners in Nature program. So you may see emails back from me on occasion.
Great. So we'll be going over a lot of the materials tonight that are in the handbook and hopefully adding some additional kind of insights or tips as we go along the way. There are also more materials, as you saw, up on the desk with examples of other successful projects and a restoration 101 guide that was written by one of the Metro scientists. So I wanted to start with a thank you to the voters who provided the funding for this grant, and Juan Carlos is going to talk a little bit about that effort.
Thank you. So as Krista mentioned, the money that we have to invest in the community is money that came from the community itself in the form of the levies that Metro has put in front of voters for their consideration. It's a five-year levy. We had the first levy back in 2013 that was approved with a great number of support in the Tri-County region. Now Metro has the authority to levy taxes and to ask for voters to give their authorization for us to get that money. So this comes from property taxes that are paid by people who own property in the region. At the end of the first levy, we realized that there was a lot of work still to be done, especially around programming related to nature and conservation, and also connecting communities with nature. So we asked last year, we asked the voters to consider another levy, and they did favorably and approved this levy, which again, it's for a five-year period, and it includes stronger language in terms of focusing on communities of color and other historically marginalized communities and connecting them with nature, in addition to the work that has been the traditional niche of Metro, which is providing access to nature and restoring natural areas, especially significant of significance in the region. So we always like to start by saying thank you to the voters for supporting these measures, and that's why we have these funds today available. So as I mentioned, the 2018 levy had stronger language, and that's also in part due to the evolution that Metro has had in terms of our understanding of racial equity, diversity, and inclusion, and how that is playing out in the different aspects of the work. So, in addition to that, Metro Council in 2013 adopted that language about underrepresented communities when they referred the 2013 levy to the voters. Around that time, Metro was in the middle of creating an equity strategy. And I actually, before I came to the Parks and Nature Department here at Metro, I worked as the equity program manager for about 3 years. So I was very closely familiar with the work of creating that racial equity, diversity, and inclusion strategic plan. So it wasn't a given that we would focus on racial equity. It actually took a lot of work to arrive to that conclusion, and Metro Council supported that conclusion. So in 2016, Metro Council approved the strategic plan to advance racial equity, diversity, and inclusion, which basically says that the work that we're going to be doing from now on, it focuses on dismantling barriers that communities of color face in order to access Metro services, programming, venues, spaces, etc. It doesn't mean that we're going to serve just communities of color. What it means is that we will continue to serve all communities, but we're going to pay special attention on how we are, what barriers we might have in place that prevent communities of color from accessing our services better, and we're going to focus on dismantling those barriers. Like our COO Martha Bennett likes to say, the mission of Metro has not changed. What has changed is how we deliver on that mission. So for a long time, we've been very good at serving a very limited segment of our community, and now we want to make sure that we are providing better services and more equitable services to all communities in the region. And the reason why we chose racial equity as the way to move forward is because when you look at the numbers in terms of the any indicators of social well-being, we see that communities of color are struggling in all of those indicators in comparison to the white community. That doesn't mean also that other communities do not suffer similar challenges or do not experience those challenges, but we feel like racial equity is the most strategic direction to make the greatest impact in making sure that everybody, all communities are supported by Metro and have the opportunity to access our services in a more equitable way. So one of those, the first things that we included in the racial equity strategy was for each of the major departments at Metro to come up with its own strategic plan to advance racial equity. And our department, Parks and Nature, is completing that work. You know, we have most of those elements in place, and we have our own specific racial equity plan. Part of that includes also a greater emphasis on racial equity in everything that we do in the department. So these grants reflect now that commitment to racial equity. Kristen?
So I'm going to talk about some of the kind of the basics of these grants. Just wanted to note that all of the photos that you're seeing in this presentation come from previous grants, so when you're looking at these photos, you can also look at them as examples of the types of projects that we have funded through the Nature and Neighborhoods Community Grants. We have $700,000 available for the Restoration and Community Stewardship Grants. This year, over 5 years, we have $3.7 million to award in these community grants, including both the education grants and the restoration grants. For this year's round, we have up to $50,000 for small grants and up to $100,000 for large grants. We're asking that the grants be accomplished within 2 years to meet that every other year framework that we have for the grant applications. As I mentioned earlier, partnerships are a really big component of this grant, and you'll see in our goals that the easiest way to accomplish that kind of those three goals is to partner with other organizations often. So we have a minimum of three partners, that's two partners plus yourself. And in part, that's to leverage skills and service, maximize inclusiveness, and find creative approaches. These are taxpayer-funded grants, and so we do want to make sure that we're serving a broad swath of our population. In terms of our minimum requirements, most of these grants, the restoration grants in particular, go to nonprofit organizations, community organizations, or organizations like watershed councils. We have also given grants in the past to government organizations, faith groups, service groups, or other types of organizations, but I would say that most of them go to community organizations or nonprofit organizations. If a group does not have nonprofit status, meaning 501c3, we do ask that they partner with another organization as a fiscal agent. Metro is not eligible to apply for or receive these grant funds. These grants are really meant to be for the community. And then in terms of financial requirements, these projects do require a one-to-one match. So often for restoration projects that are being done with community, that's a lot of volunteer time. So we use the independent sector volunteer rate, which at this point is $24.69. So that means that for every hour a volunteer is planting a tree or pulling ivy, you can use as much that time as $24.69. If they're an engineer or a landscape architect or a landscape designer, you can use their professional rate as that in-kind match rate. There are also other ways to have match funding. Some other groups have other grant funds, and so any award letter from another granting organizations like Meyer Memorial Trust or another foundation also works as kind of calculation of match. We do ask that you have the first year of funding match secured or committed by the time of your full application. And the reason that we ask for that is so that we are assured that the project is going to go forward. If you don't have the funding secured by that full application time period, we ask that you come back in 2 years and apply for the grant then when you do have that that funding committed. We do offer limited overhead reimbursement as well. So overhead for us includes things like rent and utilities, and we allow for up to 10% of our grant to be used for overhead costs. In terms of location, because again these are taxpayer-funded grants, we ask that they benefit metro area residents, because that's who's paying for these funding. The projects may occur on metro-owned property, private property, public property, but the key component is that it's of benefit to the metro area residents, and there is public access to whatever land there is. And by the full application time period, we do ask that you have landowner permission. So if you're doing a project on private land or even public land, like a public park, that you do have permission of that before before we go through that full application.
So the In terms of the purpose of these grants, as we have mentioned, these restoration and community stewardship grants support and create partnerships in local communities to improve water quality, fish and wildlife habitat, and connecting people with nature. So what we ask is that the applications that you submit clearly state how you meet the program's overall purpose. And we will prioritize applications that make sure that all of those three components are directly advanced by the implementation of your project. And these are the goals of the grant program. So the first goal, again, improve fish and wildlife habitat and water quality. The second is partnerships, community partnerships. And the third goal is to advance economic and environmental equity. And again, that's part of what Metro has been focusing on advancing racial equity. And within racial equity, we see these two specific areas that this grant program can help support. One is making sure that communities of color have access to contract dollars, to funds that come from the taxpayers, and also through contracts and through access to opportunities to generate income. And in terms of environmental equity, we want to encourage programs or projects, rather, grant applications that demonstrate how the environmental benefits of the proposed project have a benefit and a beneficial impact for communities of color and other historically marginalized communities. So those are the three goals that we're going to be looking at. And again, the priority will be given to proposals that address all of those three goals.
And if you have applied for these grants before, goal one and two are the same. It's really the third goal, the economic and environmental equity component, that is a newer portion of these grants. So I'm going to go through in a little bit more detail the goals and talk about some of the examples. So improving water quality, fish, and wildlife habitat. There are kind of two components of that. One is the actual restoration project. So in the past, as you can see from some of our example projects, it's been everything from planting projects to pulling weeds to fish habitat restoration, which sometimes is culvert replacements or riparian zone improvements along streams. And then the other part of that is supporting larger conservation initiatives. So one of the things you'll notice in the examples of past successful grant applications that I pulled is that they all tie into these other conservation initiatives. So in Oregon, we have the Oregon Conservation Strategy. We have in the Portland metro area, the Regional Conservation Strategy. Those are two documents that kind of define some of the challenges in the Portland metro area and in Oregon in terms of conservation goals, and talk about some of the ways that people in this region are addressing those challenges. There are other initiatives. For example, if you live in a watershed, which most of us do, under a watershed council, there are action plans. And so within each one of those action plans, there's a list of goals and actions that watershed council has identified as needs along the streams in its area.
And when you talk about goal one, is it everything in there? So like if you did something for wildlife and not fish, are you not meeting goal one?
No, that's a great clarification. No, it's preserve and restore fish and wildlife habitat in local communities, one component of that. For example, if you do a culvert replacement project, you're really only addressing kind of fish habitat in a stream. Yeah, so yes, Thank you for making that clarification. And that's true of the larger conservation initiatives too. I don't expect each one of your projects to address all of the conservation initiatives, the action plan, the regional conservation strategy, the Oregon conservation strategy, or whatever other plans might happen to be in your geographic area. But to, you know, make sure that there is some alignment there.
So if we were doing wildlife habitat, it also needs to support the larger conservation initiative.
Yeah, and most of the goals aren't going to be surprising, right? I mean, you talked a little bit about ivy or blackberry, right? That's a very common thing to need to pull and to plant natives, right? Mm-hmm. That would be included in the regional conservation strategy. So if you were working in prairie land and you wanted to plant oak trees, that is included in the regional conservation strategy. So those are pretty broad-based plans, and it would be, as long as you're doing kind of fairly standard restoration work, you will probably fall within the framework of those larger initiatives.
Thanks for clarifying.
Yeah, of course. So one of the projects that kind of falls underneath this is the Sandy River Delta restoration. So some of you may know this property. It's off of I-84 after you pass Troutdale on your way out to the gorge. Some people bring their dogs there. Some people go to this property because it has a Maya Lin bird blind that was built as part of the sesquicentennial of Lewis and Clark. So if you're not familiar with it, it's a very large property that's right along the Columbia River, and it is an area that's filled with things like blackberries and brambles and invasive species, and they have been tirelessly working to restore this area to its natural habitat. And they've done a lot of this through, as this man is showing, this is an area that's just been cleared of blackberries, through contractors who have been hired to do this work, as well as a lot of crews. This is also from that same group, Friends of Trees, and the Sandy River Basin Watershed Council. This is an example of a woman who's planting as part of their Friends of Trees community events. So they've done both. They've done these huge, expansive, professional restoration projects, as well as using community groups to mostly to plant, in part because, as you may have experienced in your own communities, it's much more fun for volunteers to plant things than to pull blackberries.
Yes.
Okay. The second goal is on community partnerships. So some of the examples that are in the handbook are the SMILE, which is the Selwood Moreland community, which is a community in the Selwood neighborhood. They were particularly interested in doing some small scale restoration along the spring water corridor. That's an example. Pollinator Parkways project is a very, very small project that was being done by an organization that takes the sidewalk strips and builds pollinator habitat within the sidewalk strips. And then another example is the Rose Community Development doing a project with youth in the Lentz neighborhood. So this is really meant to be more of those kind of grassroots, community-driven projects. How do you get the community involved no matter where you are? And so some of the examples are by creating partnerships, responding to community needs, increasing people's awareness, and helping people to learn about, help restore experience and or connect to nature. And again, to your question, you know, you're not expected to do all of these things. And it, within the handbook, it gives some examples of ways you could do this. You know, it's everything from the very light touch of a mass mailing or information on your website to the very in-depth interns who are working on the land and really understanding that landscape because they're working in it every day. And then everything in between. So as I mentioned, the Springwater Meadows project was done by a community group in Selwood. They worked with Cortland Parks and Recreation and Columbia Land Trust, their backyard habitat project, and Meyer Boys and Girls Club to restore a very small area along the Springwater Corridor, right there in Selwood, where the Springwater Corridor Trail actually turns. But this was an example that I wanted to bring up because it was so community-driven. And because they really relied on the expertise of Portland Parks and Recreation and Columbia Land Trust to accomplish their project. My third goal is economic and environmental equity. As I mentioned, this is a new goal for us. One of the things that we have noticed over the last 5 years is that with the Nature and Neighborhoods Community Grants, the time that grants have been most successful for incorporating racial equity, diversity, and inclusion is when the missions align of different organizations. So if an environmental organization is working with a community-based organization or an organization that is culturally specific, there needs to be some alignment between their two missions. And so often we've seen that occurs in education, workforce training, economic abilities. And so one of the ways that we've tried to incorporate that knowledge about mission alignment is by adding this goal of economic and environmental equity. And so this is really focusing on exposure to outdoor environmental and natural resources, looking for economic opportunities, whether that is, as Juan Carlos mentioned, a co-bid firm that's working on the project as a contractor, or working with community organizations and workforce training to help people further their own individual economic or their community economic possibilities. Access to nature and really focusing on communities of color and other historically marginalized groups. One of the best examples from, actually this is an education grant that was given several years in 2015 and 2016 to Momentum Alliance in cooperation with the Northwest Youth Corps. Was this internship program, which was co-created by those two organizations. So Northwest Youth Corps was bringing years and years of experience in restoration projects, and Momentum Alliance was bringing years of experience of working with underserved youth populations. Both know their areas of expertise really well, and when they co-created a project, they each brought that expertise to building not only the internship and what the interns experienced each week and each day, but also to the scope of work and the proposal that came through for the grant. They coordinated with some other organizations like U.S. Fish and Wildlife Foundation, Bureau of Land Management, for those job sites, restoration job sites, and Apano and Latino Network for some of the students who were able to participate in that internship program. So that's a little bit of an overview of the goals. In the actual review of the pre-application or the proposal that your organizations may submit, we put in the handbook specifically the criteria that we will be asking our review committee to look at in each grant proposal, because we wanted to be transparent about what those were for you. We do have a peer review process, which means that other people who work for similar organizations to your own that work in either community-based organizations, culturally specific organizations, environmental organization, like other parks departments, or work in the restoration field. All of those voices are heard within our review committee. And that review committee is really the ones who take a look at your application and review it, give specific feedback, and also recommend to the Metro Council which proposal should be brought forward to the full application stage. So it's really broken up into five different categories or five different criteria that they will be looking at. And this corresponds directly with the questions that are in the both the handbook and in Zoom grants. So if you wanted to refer back to those questions, it's in the last few pages in the handbook. But project narrative and goals is one question, partnerships is another question, organizational preparedness is another, diversity, equity, inclusion, and then some uploads about location and program reach. And I'll talk a little bit more about the actual application materials, but just wanted to make that very clear that there is a direct line between those things that we're asking for and what we're looking for in terms of criteria.
So, in terms of the timeline, here's at a glance where you can see it. So, the pre-applications are due to back to Metro by January 29th, in a few weeks, by 4 p.m. Now it has to be received, and everything has to be uploaded through Zoom Grant, so it has its own timestamp of when it's received, so we abide by that very closely. That's the deadline for submitting those pre-applications. And so between January 29th and sometime in March, we will convene the peer review group, you know, the committee that will be reviewing these applications, and they will be evaluating and assessing the applications based on those five questions and the criteria that Krista mentioned. And after, they will do the screening and the recommendation for which application should be, or which proposals should be invited to submit a full application. So we will announce that in March. And we are also we'll have a workshop in March about specifically partnerships and the racial equity component of the work. And that is because, again, as Krista mentioned, this is the first year that we are having a very explicit racial equity component to these grant applications. And in our conversations with previous grantees and other partners, it's been that has emerged as an area in which most organizations are looking for additional resources and support. Again, Metro has been working on racial equity for a number of years now, and other organizations, both in the government sector and the nonprofit sector, have been doing similar work. But the feeling and the feedback that we received is that everybody could use a little additional support in this area. So we are working with the Center for Diversity and Inclusion, which is a well-established organization that does a lot of this trainings around racial equity, and still to be determined date in March, which we will announce as soon as possible, we will offer a workshop. And for the successful proposals that are being invited to submit the full application, but we'll also open it up to other partners. So we want to make sure that we make these resources as widely available as possible, so all organizations have the opportunity to participate and continue in this growth process. We know that organizations are at very different points. You know, some of us have been working on this for longer periods. Other organizations are just starting, and others are in different stages. And we know in our own experience that racial equity is a very complex and messy process. So we want to make sure that we continue to provide this support and make it available to as many as possible. So that workshop is timed, so also it can benefit the applicants that are invited to submit the full applications in the preparation of their proposals, which are due to Metro on April 9th, again by 4 p.m. through Zoom grants. And after April 9, the peer review committee will reconvene to assess those applications, those full applications, and make recommendations. You know, as Krista mentioned, those recommendations that the committee will make are then forwarded internally to our decision makers, which are the Metro Council. They are the ones who have the ultimate say in allocating these grants. So we will provide that to Metro Council, make sure that they're familiar with the applications, and then they will consider them sometime in June 2019. You know, so they will have a public hearing on these applications and make the final award. And their funds will be available to use on July 1 of this year. So we want all projects to start their work funded through this grant on July 1. And that's really important to emphasize, because sometimes organizations want to fund previously work that they've done previously, and we're not able to do that. We will be able to fund only work that's been done July 1 and on. So that's the timeline of the process at a glance.
I think I was a little unclear. Will the peer review committee be going through the workshop as well as they present who is being asked to submit full applications, or is that a beforehand thing? Are they going through it as well, or is that not going to happen?
That's a great question, yeah. And something that we'll think about. We're still working out the details of that workshop, but that's a great suggestion.
Yeah, and also, which we'll reiterate later on, we're inviting anyone who's interested in applying to serve on this review committee. There are some conflict of interest considerations. If you are thinking of applying for a grant but are also interested in serving on the committee, it's not a barrier. No, it's not a no. But we will say is that there will be some additional precautions that we need to follow in order to avoid potential conflict of interest, but the fact that you are interested in applying for a grant or planning on applying for a grant does not disqualify you from serving on that peer review committee. So we invite you to consider that, and we'll have additional information about it soon. But I think it's a great idea to make sure that the members of the peer review committee also attend that workshop and continue to learn with us.
And how do you select those members?
So the peer review committee, so we're looking for a broad variety of either life experience or a work experience and skills. And so it's everything from experience with grant writing to experience with budgets, to experience with restoration projects, to experience with community projects, to experience with racial equity, diversity, and inclusion. So when we receive the applications, we're really looking at that mix.
Mm-hmm. You said experience in racial equity inclusion. So does that mean that you try to find diverse members for that group?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or just diverse experiences?
I think both.
And I have to apologize. I thought that I printed the how to apply for the committee, and I can go print some, maybe not 35, but it's also up on our website. So, I'll go print some. There's something missing.
And when Carlos will talk a little bit more about the review committee in a few slides. But but these are great questions. Thank you.
Another clarifying question. say you decide not to do an application, but to go to the workshop. I thought I heard you saying that, yes, the workshops are...
We'll make it widely available, not just to the applicants, but to previous grantees, to other organizations that might be interested. I think the idea is that it will benefit primarily the people, the organizations applying for the full or submitting the full application, preparing that. But at the same time, we want to share and make it available to as many people as possible.
Yeah, and like Juan Carlos said earlier, we did do a lot of we had a lot of conversations with previous grant recipients prior to putting together the handbook and the materials you see in front of you. And one of the consistent themes that we heard was a desire for more types of training and more experience in racial diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Can I ask you a quick question?
And
you may be covering this, but the geography of selection, do you try to look at the region and select from across?
Yeah, that's correct. That's a great clarifying question. So, you know, because again, this is taxpayer funded, we're trying to get a variety of projects from around the region. So, you know, a few from Washington County, a few from Clackamas County, a few from Multnomah County. It does mean that the competition for some areas of the region are stiffer than others. Like, for example, projects in the city of Portland often face stiffer competition because there are more organizations doing restoration type work. And there's honestly more funding in the Portland area for those types of projects. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we were a previous applicant and we got to the second step and got a nice form letter saying we were denied. And we never got any feedback to know what would make us a stronger application the next time. And I know that's probably asking a lot, but is it possible to...
I still have your notes. I still have notes from the last round, and I'm happy to have that feedback conversation with you if it's useful for your next application.
Yeah.
And also, one of the things that's up front is a sign-up sheet if you want to do either a more in-depth phone call or a more in-depth personal meeting. I'm happy to meet with you, and if you... need me to bring along a scientist, I can try and get a mentor scientist to come along with me.
That'd be great, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, other questions or can I keep going? It's not very much longer. We only have like 5 more slides. Okay, this is just the nitty gritty on how to apply. So this is our website. It's just a screenshot of our website. Just the only thing to note, right? It's the apply here in the little gray box. All you have to do is press that button, and it takes you to this page, which is our online system, which is Zoom Grants. As you can see, we as in Metro, have quite a few grants open right now. We have our community placemaking grants that really focuses on art in the community. We have grants available for regional travel options, so that's alternative ways of getting around. So there's some other things that are available if you're curious about them. We also have more information about them on our website. If you see on the left-hand side, this is the grants and resources page, and there's more information about all of the grants that Metro provides there. So you, in this page, you just hit the either preview if you just want to see what it looks like or the apply button. For those of you who have already submitted grants using this online system, the Zoom Grants system, you will already have an organization information set up. So you'll have your address already auto-filled in there and your organizational title. Maybe if you're a 501c3, your tax status in there as well, your identification number. For those of you who have not applied before, this is just really simple information underneath program summary, which is your program name, how much you're asking for, information about your organization. But I wanted to point something out, and that is at the bottom of the page, there's this thing called additional contacts for this application and an opportunity to add collaborators. This seems like a minor thing. It's actually really important, especially if you go forward in the application process, because you want more people like your bookkeeper or your executive director or your board member who's actually writing the application to have access to this online system. So either set this first page up so that you have a universal email address and a universal password that you don't mind sharing with others, you know, not your dog's name or, you know, your personal pet name for your loved one, but something that you don't mind sharing with other contacts. Either do it that way or really pay attention to who is in your additional contacts and collaborators at the bottom of this first page. The next tab, you can either press up here on the tab or down below, there's a next button. It's actually the pre-application questions, and these are also in your handbook. And the last, I think the last few pages of your application handbook. The first few questions are pretty basic, very short answers. The program summary is basically your elevator speech. What would you say if you were standing in the elevator with a Metro counselor or a member of the peer review committee? And then information about if you have a fiscal agent, their name there, any program partners that are committed, any ones that you think that will be partners but you haven't quite checked with them yet, or you haven't quite gotten commitment yet, you put here. So these are pretty simple answers, very short. The next answers are about one page each. One page is technically 3,000 characters. We're trying to help you out here by giving 4,000 characters because we know that sometimes people go over, and it's certainly easier to write more than to try and write more concisely. So again, these questions are in your handbook, but you know, your program narrative, what is your project trying to do? And why is it important? The goals. How is this meeting the goals of the Nature and Neighborhoods Community Grants? And how is it meeting the goals that have already been set up, for example, in the Regional Conservation Strategy or those Watershed Action Plans? Partnerships, how are these active partners? What is the role of each partner? What are they doing? And why is it important that you have collaborations with these particular organizations or individuals? What are they bringing to the table? Organizational preparedness. What is your organization have that is a key component of how you will accomplish this project? And if you don't have a particular skill or expertise, who are you bringing to the table who does? And explaining, you know, pretty clearly the roles of each organization to bring the expertise and the skills that will allow you to actually complete this project. Diversity, equity, inclusion. Describe how your project involves communities of color and the demographics of the community served, and especially in identifying not just in the receiving end of this project, but how are they involved in the need for designing and delivering of this project or programming. So from start to finish. The other two questions here are actually uploads. So these questions are just prompts, so you remember to do this. One is the location and program reach, which is just a simple map. So in the handbook and here I have a couple of examples of ways that people have done a map before. People have used Google Maps, that's fine. People have done hand-drawn maps, that's fine. There are some other viewers and online resources that I've listed here if you want to go that route that offer more information, that offer layers of information about the type of natural resources that are available in that area or the demographics. And then finally, the demographic form. So I'll go to this page. This is the document upload. So this is where you will actually upload those two requests, which is the map and here the demographic form. The demographic form is not to be used for the review of your grant proposal. So this demographic form really asks whether your organization is a culturally specific organization, and if your partners are culturally specific organizations, and if you plan to serve over 50% of a particular demographic group. And the reason that we ask this is to check ourselves, to check whether we as grant administrators are receiving a variety of grant proposals and whether those grant proposals are making it through each phase, or whether there's additional work that we need to do to make these grants welcoming to all. But this is actually, that demographic form will be blocked from the peer review team, so they won't have access to it. They'll be looking for that information in your diversity, equity, and inclusion answer. So at the end, just like to point out that the submit button is actually in an odd place. It's actually at the top. It's not shown on this example, but when you go to submit, look to the top. It's very awkward in Zoom Grants, but you do need to look at the top of the page in order to submit it. There are also some kind of basic little things that are quirks of Zoom Grants. Things like it really doesn't like odd figures or symbols. So when you're writing your grant application, I recommend one that you write it in a Word document and that you save it as text only. Take everything out. Take the bullets out. Take the formatting out. Take the bolding out. Take out the hyphens. So that's a very simple document that then can be uploaded to this online system, because sometimes the system will not like a particular type of text. Yeah?
Does it save as you go, or?
It does save as you go, okay. Yeah. The only trick is that, that's fine. So for example, if you're writing in this program narrative, in order for it to save, you actually have to click into another box.
Okay.
Yeah, but it does save as you go.
Okay.
But I do recommend that you do it in a Word document first.
There's a little, it's often perceptible, a little green flash almost, that when you when you click between boxes, you'll see that little green flash. And if you miss the submit button, you won't get an auto reply email. So that's definitely one thing to think about when you're submitting, is did you get the email?
Yeah, it's not showing on this page, but at the top there is a help button. So if you're receiving an error message, Zoom Grants is really good at, their tech support is really good at responding to inquiries. They're very fast. So please do use that as a resource. And the reason that we have a 4 p.m. deadline is so that Oriana and I are sitting at our desks, and so if something goes wrong, we're there. And, you know, maybe just between the two of us, you know, three of us, the end time is actually midnight. We say 4 p.m. because we're at our desks, but the grant is actually not due until midnight.
And just because software is one of those things, we learned the very first year we used Zoom Grants. One of the benefits to that software is actually that we can see applications that were started but not submitted. So the first thing that I do the morning after a grant application is go straight to that page. And some of you may have experienced this, where Krista sends you an email that says, it looks like you were like almost done with an application. And so yeah, we'll scan for that to try to catch anybody that falls through the cracks and just didn't hit that submit button. But yeah.
So we just have a couple more slides. Juan Carlos, did you want to talk any more about the review committee, or did you want me to talk about it?
Thank you to Oriana for passing around the information about application for the review committee. As we mentioned before, you know, this it's important that it for us for Metro that we have a group of people that have that combined expertise on the different goals. You know, those three goals of the grant program. Plus, they represent the diversity of the region in terms of demographics, in terms of racial composition, in terms of other demographic categories, and also in terms of geography. Like we said, you know, this is Metro is a regional government, so we want to make sure that the grants are also spread out across the region in terms of geography and in terms of communities that are benefiting. Likewise, we want to put together a committee that is reflects the diversity of the region in general, of the people living in the region in general. So, with a special consideration also to restoration and community stewardship, which is the focus of this grant funding. So, that's what we will be looking for in terms of bringing together this group. As I mentioned before, if you are an applicant, that does not disqualify you from serving. That just means there will be some conflict of interest rules to observe, but you feel free, you know, if you're interested, feel free to fill out that application. I believe it has in the directions there, you can apply electronically, you can submit, send us an email with your interest and your resume describing your and information describing your what you bring to the committee, you know, what specific knowledge or lived experience you bring to the committee that will help inform the decisions that the committee will making, or the recommendations rather than the committee will be making as a group. So I forget exactly the deadline. I think July.
We said January. So if you're, you know, in the next week. Week would be awesome if you're interested in applying.
So we encourage you to consider that. If you think of other folks that you think would be good to serve on the committee, please help us spread the word. And we look forward to assembling a committee that will really help us make these important recommendations and decisions.
Finally, application assistance. I think most of you saw the sign-up sheet up front, but we do have times to have a phone call or an in-person meeting to go over your actual proposal or an idea. If you want to wait until the very end and actually have a draft, I'm happy to go through your draft with you. If you have any questions, feel free to email us, call us. We're happy to help. One of the reasons that we use a peer review committee is so that we have the ability to answer any questions that you may have and provide you assistance without influencing the review process. So please do use us in a way that we can help you. And that's it. These are our contacts if you would like to contact us. And we'll answer any questions that you might have. Again, thank you so much for taking the time out of your evening to be here with us. We really appreciate it.